For decades, the files a large part of the world wanted access to were, of course, the JFK assassination files. One document release was followed by another each time, leaving people still wanting for more. Are we on that same path with the impending release of the Jeffrey Epstein files? Will any degree of a lack of full transparency be the result of following the law, or will it be cause for conspiracies? Our next guest is very familiar with classified documents, the release process, and paths to access of them. He's a former FBI operative who wound up bringing down fellow FBI agent and Russian mole Robert Hansen. He's an attorney, cybersecurity expert, speaker, and author. His latest book, Spies, Lies, and Cyber Crimes, Cybersecurity Tactics to Outsmart Hackers and Disarm Scammers, Eric O'Neill. Thanks for being here today, Eric.
Chris, thanks for having me on.
EricO'Neill.net. Find out more about Eric's public speaking service and his books as well. And yes, his previous book did tell the story of the Robert Hansen incident. If you want to catch up on that bit of history, and maybe if time allows, we'll do the same with Eric as we talk here. You first heard the files now signed and sealed. What are your expectations about them being delivered now?
Well, having been on both sides of this equation, a FBI investigator who was producing redactions, which means that anytime we had information that was going to be disclosed, and much of what I was working on was top secret or higher, we would literally, back in my day, take a very heavy, thick black marker and, you know, cross out the information that we didn't want to disclose. Today it's a little bit different, but it took time. And then I was on the other side as an attorney, national security attorney, challenging the government for over-redacting. I will tell you that the training for government officials is to over-redact, because it could be devastating if critical information was inadvertently disclosed. So I think that we will see over-redactions here. And I will be surprised if the Department of Justice meets the 30-day deadline that is in the Congressional Act, leading to the release of the DOJ's investigation into Jeffrey Epstein, which is what we're calling the Epstein files. Now, they have 30 days, according to the Act, unless they can beg for more time, to release everything that doesn't come under a bucket of exclusions to those investigative files, and then 15 days after that to explain what they chose to exclude. And there are a number of ways that the government can exclude documents, and we can get into those if you like.
Absolutely, but just with that 30-day notice, are they a victim of their own reliance on Donald Trump? Because he basically did a 180-degree turn on the file release. So instead of preparing for what we later saw to be inevitable, they instead just sat on it status quo. So they made it more challenging for themselves, I believe.
Yeah, that's certainly true. But on the other hand, any time that there is a request for release of information, and remember, any of us who are U.S. citizens or any entity or organization can submit what's called a Freedom of Information Act request or FOIA request to any government agency saying, I want to see documents. I'm a citizen. I have a right to see. And then that government agency usually says, it's going to take us 30 to 45 days. It depends on their particular regulations to get this information back to you. And that gives them time to do the redactions. So 30 days is actually a pretty short time frame for such a large investigative file. That's why I think that they will get close to a 30-day mark and then ask for more time.
And even through a Freedom of Information Act request, you can still get back pages, which are nothing more than large black squares of black ink.
Yes, and actually what they do now, because everything's digital, is instead of seeing just a lot of black, you just see a blank page, and there might be a bracketed sentence that says entire page redacted, right? And now what they'll have to do after you see all the holes in the information, and I bet that will be the juiciest bits of the information will not be in there, the DOJ is going to have to explain why they redacted, and there will be a number of reasons that they can use to explain it. But I think that what we don't see will actually be illustrative of a number of things, including whether there are open investigations, whether there are cooperating witnesses that have had their names removed. and perhaps some insight into where the DOJ had planned to go in the past and now where they're going in the future.
Certainly, it's almost a reverse jigsaw puzzle. Same thing has happened over time with the JFK assassination files. A lot of the researchers were wanting to know because they had seen the absence of a name they said was key, George Ioannidis. And that last document dump, well, included Ioannidis' name, but not much other than that. So sometimes a release doesn't give answers. It creates more questions.
Exactly. And I love the way you termed it, a reverse jigsaw puzzle, because the way we're going to have to look at it is exactly that. And I fear, and I'm trying to manage people's expectations with this one, but I fear that instead of alleviating many of the conspiracy theories, this will add fuel to the fire. Like, for example, the conspiracy theory, and I think it is that Epstein was a asset of Israeli intelligence Mossad, or there's another one that he was an asset of the CIA and doing all of these horrible things in order to exploit and blackmail individuals into doing what the U.S. or Israel wanted. I see that as conspiracy theory, but if there is any information related to national security matters, and all of that would be national security matters, then that information won't be in there. That's one of the two strictest things that I think will be preserved and not disclosed, the other being any information related to a victim, which, of course, we would never want to be in any disclosure.
No, absolutely. We're talking with former FBI agent Eric O'Neill, speaker now, cybersecurity expert, author of the latest book, Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, Cybersecurity Tactics, to Outsmart Hackers and Disarm Scammers, ericoneal.net, the website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. I think that it's almost what's being said about the files is creating the conspiracies even for the release, because we're talking about a private individual who hung out with, you know, the power players, but where does national security fit into this?
Right. I don't think it does. But there have been conspiracy theories, because when you don't have information and when you have, in a way, this investigation has been a black box to the public, then there is conjecture over what could be behind it, or why we're not seeing the information, right? Or why the list hasn't come out. There are so many people who believe that there is a detailed client list that Epstein kept, that has all of the bad actors who were abusing young children, which is the primary allegation against Epstein. And of course, we want that list if it exists, because we want to punish those guilty people who allegedly collected, you know, a heinous act, you know, perpetrated a heinous act on the youngest and most vulnerable. You know, either the list is there or it's not, or it's just names in different parts and scattered and a lot more complicated than people would like it to be. But when a lot of people believe there is something, a list like that, and no list is revealed, then they build stories and ideas around why that would not be revealed.
That plays back to what Pam Bondi said on Fox News one time, that she had the list on her desk and reviewing it, and she's been hedging that bet ever since. I think what's been missing from a lot of the discussion, Eric, is hanging over all this through the federal government document release, doesn't the Epstein estate still possess a pretty big chunk of files and photos and other elements of Jeffrey Epstein's life? That they don't do they have to submit those into federal overseers before release, or can the estate just release them to the Congressional Oversight Committee on their own?
The state can do anything they want with their documents. Now, those would have already been, I would suspect, seized by the Department of Justice and FBI, and will be part of this still ongoing investigation, it seems like, after all these many, many years. Certainly they could do that. More victims could come forward and make accusations. It's just that public scrutiny is not something that probably the estate or many of the victims want. And remember that one of the primary victims who did come forward ended up taking her life. And because sometimes this scrutiny together with the trauma can lead to those sort of extreme outcomes. In the whole case is, it can be devastating for the victims. And, you know, I got to say, I certainly hope that there are ongoing investigations, that when we do see this information, we see a bucket of information that is not revealed and indicates that there are ongoing investigations by the FBI and DOJ into potential criminals who were co-conspirators or took part in the trafficking of young people.
As they say, silence can be deafening, and if the individuals are banking on some level of statute of limitation protections, I have to remind those individuals, so were Catholic priests, and we saw how that could change.
Exactly. In many jurisdictions, in particular in New York, I don't think that there is a statute of limitations for this sort of sexual crime.
I just want to wrap up a little time with your book, Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, because what you write about, there's so many people that don't even do the basics. I'm thinking especially understanding that their smartphone is no different than a tablet or a desktop computer. It makes their data accessible to the dark people and the dark web. And even taking the most simple steps can make a big difference in your personal cybersecurity.
Certainly. Well, I wrote the book to help people win this battle over our data. Cyber criminals right now and cyber crime, it's the largest growing business on earth and certainly the fastest. It's one of the biggest. They are making billions and trillions of dollars every year off of us, and they're doing it by fooling us. And that's one thing that I really wanted my readers to understand, that it's not some magic piece of malware that somehow gets on your phone and takes your data. What attackers are doing are deceiving you and me. They're fooling us into handing over our data, and they're using traditional espionage. So I wrote a book that goes all the way back to my origins in the FBI and how I learned counterintelligence at the FBI Academy. And through true crime stories, I teach you to see all the ways that attackers are compromising us, deceiving us, impersonating those we care about, using confidence schemes, and ultimately infiltrating and destroying that data that has become so important to us. So, yes, when you have your phone and you're scrolling through your social media or you're looking through your emails or you're reviewing your texts, you're in a battle zone. This is where cyber criminals are thriving and fooling us into believing that something that we know in our hearts can't be true is true. And especially now in holiday season, we have to be very careful, because this is where cyber criminals make most of their money off consumers. And we have to, while we're out there shopping more than ever before in history online, this is where we have to be the most careful.
I get frequently that your purchase with ABC Incorporated has been declined, and the email says into your card. I never made a purchase from ABC Incorporated, but as you said, during the holiday season, we're bouncing around the airports or the buses or whatever the case may be, and we're just checking to see what's there. Oh, yeah, let me hit that button, and you're dead.
Exactly.
You're dead just by one.
And what criminals are doing is they're using AI now to build these incredibly attractive and deceptive ads that they'll post in social media. They'll send to you by text. They'll send to you by email. They will lead to fake websites. Those fake websites, what we call drop sites, will then start scanning your phone or your computer or your tablet to try to find a flaw that they can then use software to take it over. Sometimes they will use those to phish you, which is a technical cybersecurity term, and get you to enter in your name and your address and birth date and sometimes even social security number and your credit card information with these elaborate scams, and then they've stolen your identity. So we have to be very careful to never click through. That's one of the biggest rules. Links that you see in your social media and that come unsolicited in texts and emails. You always want to just delete that and then go directly to the store that you think is giving you that amazing deal, 70% off, today only. This will be gone in 1 hour, right? too good to be true, and it probably is.
Exactly. That's what Eric does with Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, Cybersecurity Tactics to Outsmart Hackers and Disarm Scammers. He'll show you how to be your best security system, protect your data, protect your electronics, and so protect the money that you hope is going to stay in your various bank accounts or online accounts. You can find out more about Eric's speaking, his books, at ericoneal.net. Eric, thanks for helping us better understand, too, what's to come, what to expect, and how to, in a way, when we see what comes out, play a little detective work on our own as trying to determine what's missing and what that tells us. Thanks for being here today.
Cliff, thanks for having me, and just know that I will be looking very closely at whatever the DOJ discloses and writing about what I think didn't make it in there and what it means.